Over the years, movies have depicted reporters as hard-hitting, honest men and women who speak truth to power, or corrupt, self-aggrandizing maniacs who would do anything for higher circulation or ratings. The four films we'll be discussing on this month's projection segment are His Girl Friday, Ace in the Hole, Network, and Good Night and Good Luck. And I'm pleased to welcome to our show Joe Saltzman, a professor of journalism and director of image of the Journalist in Popular Culture Project at USC Annenberg, and New York Times film writer and historian Dave Kerr. Welcome to our show.
Thanks, Legend.
Thank you.
Let's begin with His Girl Friday. It's from 1940. It was directed by Howard Hawks and stars Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell as a pair of recently divorced journalists. Joe, can you give us a quick synopsis of the plot?
Well, His Girl Friday is based on the front page, Ben Hecht and Charlie MacArthur's newspaper classic. And Charles Lederer and Howard Hawks had the brilliant idea of turning Hildy Johnson, who was a male reporter in all of the front page adaptations, into a female, played by Rosalind Russell. Cary Grant plays the editor, and now they were married, so you have that extra layer of the man-female kind of situation. And Hildy wants to leave the newspaper and live a normal life, but the editor doesn't want her to go, and he'll do anything to keep her on the job. And what follows is a fast-paced satire in the news business and marriage.
And Dave, it's often listed as one of Hawks's finest screwball comedies. Did he make it into a screwball comedy? Do you think that this is the best of all the versions of the front page?
I would agree that it's the best of all the versions, of which there are four, to my knowledge, and probably some unofficial ones as well. The original play is of course very screwball, and there's a 1930 film which is very interesting because the dialogue is very, very similar. I mean, and Hawks and Lederer didn't change all that much from the original piece.
We have a clip from His Girl Friday where Hildy, played by Rosalind Russell, tries to explain to Walter, played by Cary Grant, that she's getting remarried and quitting journalism.
I'm getting married, Walter, and I'm also getting as far away from the newspaper business as I can get.
What?
I am through.
You can get mad all you want, Hildy, but you can't quit the newspaper business.
Oh, well, why not?
I know you, Hildy. I know what quitting would mean to you.
And what would it mean?
It would kill you.
You can't sell me that, Walter Burns.
Who says I can't? You're a newspaper man.
That's why I'm quitting. I want to go someplace where I can be a woman.
You mean be a traitor?
A traitor? A traitor to what?
A traitor to journalism. You're a journalist, Hildy.
A journalist? Now, what does that mean? Peeking through keyholes? Chasing after fire engines? Waking people up in the middle of the night to ask them if Hitler's going to start another war? Stealing pictures off old ladies? I know all about reporters, Walter. A lot of Daffy Budinskys running around without a nickel in their pockets. And for what? So a million hired girls, motorman's wives, will know what's going on? Why, I... Oh, what's the use? Walter, you wouldn't know what it means to... Well, want to be respectable and live a halfway normal life. Point is, I'm through.
Rosalind Russell's character does not describe journalists in a positive light there, Joe. She says they're not respectable, that they chase fire engines, they wake people up in the middle of the night, they're stealing pictures off old ladies, whatever that means. Was that the general image of reporters at the time?
Well, you know, the reporters in that press room, which were lots of journalists loved watching it, but they really are a bunch of unethical, lying news hounds who make up the news as they go along. And when there's a wonderful scene, especially in His Girl Friday, which is much superior to the original, in this scene when they're behaving rather viciously towards a prostitute, the girlfriend of a prisoner, and Hildy goes out and comforts the woman. And when she returns, she says, "Gentlemen of the press," and she says it with such controlled anger and sarcasm and bitterness that her colleagues finally feel a sense of shame. But throughout the film, they're making things up as they go along. If there's no news, they're just creating it out of thin air, and they're behaving terribly. And if they were reporting today on any major newspaper, they would be laughed out of their job. But the image of the journalist is like that throughout the 30s and the 40s. The journalist will do anything to get a story. And there's something very interesting that I've discovered, that the reporter or editor could get away with almost anything as long as the end result was in the public interest. The journalist could lie or cheat, distort, bribe, betray, violate any ethical code as long as in the end the journalist exposed corruption, solved a murder, you know, caught a thief or saved an innocent. And most films about journalism do end with the reporter or editor winning the battle, if not the war.
And Dave, Cary Grant argues that journalists have it, that is the desire to report, in their blood.
Yeah, I think that's a great clip because it illustrates the dichotomy of the image of the newspaper man, who is at once a totally self-interested cynic and, you know, the great idealistic teller of truth. And Grant is trying to appeal to her on that basis, too.
The film opens with a disclaimer which warns the audience that the film is set in the dark ages of the newspaper game when journalists would do anything short of murder to get the story. Unlike what was happening then and happens today.
Yeah, I mean, it's still clearly set in the early 30s when things were a lot more rough and tumble than they'd become by 1940.
But His Girl Friday also deals with some serious issues, including a corrupt mayor and sheriff who are pushing through the execution of a prisoner named Earl Williams to win an election. Aren't Hildy and Walter eventually redeemed because they're campaigning against that execution, Joe?
Well, that's the point.
And they can't rely on DNA evidence either.
They can do anything during the film. They can act terribly. They can do crooked things. They can do everything. But in the end, Hildy and Walter do save this man, and they do expose corruption, and that's why they're more or less heroes. You know, the editor, Walter Burns, especially in the original, is just terrible. I mean, there's terrible things to keep Hildy. They treat Hildy's fiancé in the original, a woman, and in the remake, a male. They treat this person in the worst possible way, and the audience kind of laughs at it because it's usually an actor like Ralph Bellamy, I think, plays it in His Girl Friday.
We have another clip from the film, this one where Hildy has caught Earl Williams.
Hildy, this is war. You can't desert me
now. Oh, Walter, will you get off that trapeze? You've got your story right over there on the desk. Go on, smear it all over the front page. Earl Williams captured by the Morning Post. I covered your story for you, and I got in a fine mess doing it. Now I'm getting out.
You drooling idiot. What do you mean?
I just what
out?
I said.
There are 365 days in a year one can get mad. How many times you got a murderer locked up in a desk? Once in a lifetime. Hildy, you got the whole city by the seat of the pants.
Sure, I know.
You know. You got the brain of a pancake. This isn't just a story you're covering. It's a revolution. This is the greatest yarn in journalism since Livingston discovered Stanley.
The other way around.
Oh, well, don't get technical at a time like this. Do you realize what you've done, honey? You've taken a city that's been graft-ridden for 40 years under the same old gang, and with this yarn, you're kicking him out. You're giving us a chance to have the same kind of government New York's having under the Guardia.
Well, at least New York came out of that sounding good. Dave, it takes place in Chicago, doesn't it? You started in Chicago.
I did indeed, and it's thinly veiled. It's never identified as Chicago, and there are little things that are changed, like the Capitol is upstate, which is obviously not the case in Illinois.
Do people speak that fast in Chicago?
They certainly can. They certainly can. Yeah.
That was one of Hawks's great things, having people speak that fast and talking on each other, which most people associate with New York.
He was a real pioneer in that technique, of course, and he was a Midwesterner through and through.
My guests are David Kerr of the New York Times, Joe Saltzman of the Annenberg School of Communications. We're talking about journalism on film on today's projections here on the Leonard Lopez Show on WNYC, wnyc.org. The next film that we're going to talk about is Ace in the Hole from 1951, directed by another great director, Billy Wilder, and it stars Kirk Douglas as Chuck Tatum, a conniving, down-on-his-luck reporter in New Mexico who discovers a man named Leo, played by Richard Benedict, trapped in a collapsed mine. Dave, can you give us a synopsis of the plot?
Well, Douglas is a down-and-out New York journalist who's committed some unspecified crimes in his past and has been banished to the Southwest as a result. And
he's been obnoxious, it seems.
Oh, he's had an affair with his publisher's wife and a few things that have not happened in my experience with the newspaper world, but it's possible.
Uh-huh.
He sees this as his chance to get back in the big time, so he turns it into a big event. It's modeled on a true case from the 20s, a guy named Floyd Collins who was caught in a mine in West Virginia, I say. I can't remember exactly. And much the same thing happened. It became a national media sensation, and lots of money was made. It's he keeps the fellow in the mine for 7 days and ends up killing him when there was an easy way of going in and getting him right away. So the ethics become keeping the story alive as opposed to actually doing the right thing and saving them.
He references Floyd Collins in the movie. He's also a hard drinker, which is an image that people had of journalists. Joe, what do you think the film reveals about how the public views reporters, or at least did in 1951?
Well, here's the interesting thing. Nobody saw that film when it came out. It was even renamed The Big Carnival, and still people didn't go see it. So I don't know what kind of impact it really had on the public. It had more an impact on the critics and other journalists who thought it was one of the worst portrayals of a journalist in the history of movies. And up until the DVD release recently, and I suspect more people will watch the DVD than anything else, it really wasn't seen. But it does illustrate that while the hero, the reporter, editor who is usually an heroic portrayal, is doing something in the public interest. At the same time, the most indelible image may be that of the journalist as scoundrel, as evil, as the worst of villains, because these journalists use the precious commodity of public confidence in the press for their own selfish ends. And that's what Kirk Douglas does. If the journalist uses the power of the media for his or her own personal, political, or financial gain, if the end result is not in the public interest, then no matter what the journalist does, no matter how much he or she struggles with his or her conscience or tries to do the right thing, evil has won out. And that's what happens here. Douglas uses that precious commodity of the press for his own personal gain. He wants to go back to the big time. He wants to use this story to get back to the big time newspapers, and he uses the story for his own personal ends, and that's tragedy, and it makes him a villain.
Now, Joe pointed out that the film did not do well at the box office here, although it did well in Europe, which I'm not exactly sure why. Did that reflect a certain European anti-Americanism? It was a film released at a time when both Wilder and Douglas were at the height of their fame.
It was Wilder's first film after Sunset Boulevard. But it's not a film that I like particularly. I think
I love it, by the way.
It's so extreme in the
it's
sense.
It's so cynical.
It is, but it's so moralistic. It's so judgmental at the same time. It goes as far in that direction as Richard Brooks' Deadline USA, which came out a couple of years later, goes in the other direction, making Humphrey Bogart into this very saintly white knight figure. I much prefer films like His Girl Friday, where they're a little bit of each. You know, it's these two sides of the imaginary version of the business that are competing for to create something important.
We have a clip from early in the film where Chuck is driving down the road with Herbie, a younger photographer for the paper that they work at in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Herbie boy, how long did you go to that school of journalism?
3 years.
3 years down the drain. Me, I didn't go to any college, but I know what makes a good story, because before I ever worked on a paper, I sold them on a street corner. And you know the first thing I found out? Bad news sells best. Because good news is no news.
I think that a lot of reporters will still say that. By the way, Joe, doesn't this film also hit on themes of political corruption?
Yeah, and you know, you could say one reason it wasn't popular is that it's really more of an indictment of the public than the journalist, because the public comes by and it becomes a carnival atmosphere, and the public behaves very badly in getting involved in the story. But, you know, it's a very melodramatic film. When Douglas dies at the end, it's almost he wishes himself to die. He's stabbed by a pair of scissors, but he doesn't go to the hospital. He doesn't try to get any help for it. He just goes back to the newsroom and in quite a melodramatic ending dies. And so, you know, the film, I agree with Dave, is not really, I think, a great film. And even though Wilder's a fantastic director, and Douglas really saves the film with an amazing portrait of a journalist, it's really not a very good film.
Late in the film, Chuck Tatum's editor confronts him about his ethical lapses. And let's take a listen to that.
I'm on my way, and if it takes a deal with a crooked sheriff, that's all right with me. And if I have to fancy it up with an Indian curse and a broken-hearted wife for Leo, that's all right, too.
Not with me, it isn't. And not with a lot of others in this business. Phony, below-the-belt journalism, that's what it is.
Not below the belt, right in the gut, Mr. Boot. Human interest.
You heard me, phony. For all I know, there isn't even a Leo down there.
Yes, there is. Tatum made sure of that.
Look, I've waited a long time for my turn at bat. Now that they've pitched me a fat one, I'm going to smack it right out of the ballpark.
The editor used the phrase below-the-belt journalism in reference to human interest stories. This is still the way of American journalism, isn't it?
It reminds me of that great line in His Girl Friday where they're having to remake the front page, and they said, no, we have to cut that story about the chicken. And Cary Grant says, no, not the chicken. That's human interest.
So, Joe, do you think that Kirk Douglas's character knows that he's doing wrong?
Oh, yeah. He will do anything to get back to the big time. And that's pretty much a common theme throughout the films on journalism. The journalist always wants the big scoop, the big story, the story that's going to make him not only a household name, but maybe get him out of journalism, maybe get him into some other profession. Because throughout the history of the journalist in film, he's always slightly ashamed that he's a journalist. It's not a profession he feels is worthy of his great talent. He'll want to be a novelist in the old days, or a playwright, and in later years, a movie script writer, or something with more substance. So I think the journalist in films is always looking for that great story and will do anything to get the story. That's a consistent theme from silent films to yesterday's films.
We'll take a little break, and we'll come back with more from Joe Saltzman, professor of journalism, director of Image of the Journalist in Popular Culture Project at USC Annenberg, and Dave Kerr, the writer on film and historian on film, whose articles appear regularly in the New York Times. And we are back with Dave Kerr, who writes for the New York Times, writes about film reissues, and Joe Saltzman of the Annenberg School of Communications. And we're talking about how journalism has been depicted on film. And there have been a lot of movies. We had a lot of movies to choose from. Quite a few, Dave, journalists wound up writing for the movies. Ben Hecht, we mentioned earlier, and Sam Fuller, who many people think is probably the greatest underrated director of all time.
He's a remarkable filmmaker, and a lot of his style comes from his experience at tabloid papers. He really believes in the story that's a punch in the gut, exactly like the editor says in Ace in the Hole. And that's the way he tells his films. And his two great films about journalism are Park Row, which is a nostalgic look at the early days, and Shock Corridor, which is a crazy, crazy story about a journalist who infiltrates a mental institution to try to get a...
to get a story, and is driven crazy by the experience.
And he goes insane. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any favorites, Joe, other than the ones that we're talking about?
I love a film in the 30s called A Finger Points, which is about a journalist who starts out being an eager young journalist and is corrupted by the system. He gets beaten up in the course of a story, and the editor and the newspaper will not pay for his medical bills, so he becomes corrupted and dies at the end a hero, although he's really shot down for being in cahoots with the mob. It's a really interesting film with Faye Ray and Richard Bartholomew.
Yeah, it's interesting that the next two films that we're talking about are actually about television journalism rather than newspaper journalism. And we are going to go out of sequence chronologically, but stay in sequence on the times that they're set in. So the next film is Good Night and Good Luck, about Edward R. Murrow's war with McCarthyism in the early 1950s, released in 2005, directed by George Clooney, who also plays Murrow's producer. Also stars David Strathairn as Murrow and Frank Langella as Bill Paley. Joe, can you tell us what happens in this movie?
Well, it essentially focuses on Murrow and producer Fred Friendly's famous TV broadcast exposing Joe McCarthy. It pretty much stays in that time frame. It doesn't really tell us much more about Murrow. There was a TV movie made in 1986 called Murrow with Daniel Travanti in the title role that was more on his biography. This mostly is on the Joe McCarthy broadcast, and I think it's an heroic image of the journalist, but it's really a myth about the famous CBS newsman, Murrow. It really doesn't go into all of Murrow's defects. It really paints him as a great hero and a man who exposed McCarthy, even though he came rather late to the game. That really isn't part of the film. I think George Clooney, because of his father and his background in journalism, thought of Murrow as a great idol and a great icon. And I think that's what the film does, which is good for the heroic image of the journalist, maybe not that great for historical accuracy.
But, Dave, don't you also think that this film had a lot to do with the politics of 2005 and the war in Iraq?
Definitely, yeah. It's much more a film of 2005, I think, than it is of 1955 or whenever it's taking place.
Because this film came out after the mainstream media were attacked for their erroneous reporting on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction programs.
Definitely. And Clooney also had an axe to grind about his own coverage in what was becoming an increasingly gossip-oriented, celebrity-oriented press. And I think this was his attempt to raise the level of debate.
We have a clip from the film in which Murrow and his producer, Fred Friendly, are arguing about another CBS official, with another CBS official about a report that they're producing. Let's take a listen.
I don't think you can call this a neutral piece.
Well, the other side's been represented rather well for the last couple of years.
To the Air Force,
so
they haven't gone on the record.
You're forego the standards you've stuck to for 15 years? Both sides, no commentary.
We all editorialize.
We're just making sure we identify what it is you're
giving them the information up front, and we're asking them to comment on it.
Fred, hold on, Fred. I've searched my conscience, and I can't for the life of me find any justification for this. And I simply cannot accept that there are, on every story, two equal and logical sides to an argument. Call it editorializing if you'd like.
It is editorializing.
They're going to have equal time to defend themselves.
Do you understand the position you're putting us in?
We are all in this together. If the Senate wants to investigate...
Do me this favor, Fred. Avoid any big speeches about how we're all in a big boat together, okay? Please don't insult me. I have to go back to Mr. Paley and Alcoa, who sponsors your show, and also happens to have some military contracts, and I have to tell them that they're going to be in a bit of a tough bind because of a beef you had with Joe McCarthy.
We're not going at McCarthy.
Well, you're starting the goddamn fire.
That raises a couple of issues journalists face, from inserting opinion into a story to corporate pressures and advertising dollars and the whole argument about two sides to every story. These are the sorts of things that reporters encounter throughout their careers, isn't it, Joe?
Yeah, I think the whole concept of objectivity and two sides to every story is not only outdated, but never made any sense. I think it's very important that a reporter be fair and accurate. And we teach it in the journalism school, fairness and accuracy is the top thing. If you're fair and accurate, you'll never get in any problems. There sometimes really aren't two sides to both stories. I think the whole debate on Darwinism is certainly an example. There really isn't two great sides to that story, and yet every newscast, if they interview a scientist, they have to interview somebody they can find who will give the opposite point of view, usually a faith-based judgment. And I think this follows us throughout. I think the riots during the Vietnam War, which I covered as a TV reporter and a newspaper guy. It was a very badly covered situation because you couldn't use profanity and you couldn't really tell what was going on and you couldn't take sides and you couldn't give one point of view. You tried to be as fair as possible, but you couldn't really tell the story because at that time there were all kinds of prohibitions against using profanity on the air, so you could never show why the police were angry at the rioters who were telling them just horrible things. So, I mean, that kind of two sides to every story, I think, is a real problem for any journalist that wants to do a good job. On the other hand, you don't want a journalist like we're seeing now on TV every day, giving their personal opinions on everything, speculating on everything, offering gossip and their own view on everything. That's not journalism, that's editorializing. So what you want is fairness, accuracy, fairness to all sides, but definitely not showing two sides in which one side doesn't make any sense.
Dave, you want to add to that?
I think that's the big issue right now, is how journalists have become opinion writers on television.
Well, aren't you expected to be an opinion writer because you write about you used to be a film reviewer and you write about films and
yeah, the Times
still their role in history.
The Times is still very careful to mark off opinion from reported stories, and that's distinction I don't always see on CNN. And
in the film, at one point, Murrow and Friendly have to pay for the report themselves. Does that ever really happen?
It's happened in my experience where you'll go out and you'll say, well, if we're going to lose this much advertising, we'll do this. We'll take a cut in salary. That's happened before, but it's very rare.
The last film on our list is Network from 1976, starring Peter Finch, William Holden, and Faye Dunaway. Dave, can you give us a quick synopsis of the plot?
Well, it begins with a very famous speech by Peter Finch as the newsman Howard Beale, who goes on and gives his, I'm mad as hell and I'm not taking it anymore. He becomes essentially a...
We actually have the clip. Should we hear the way Peter Finch delivers the line?
I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Do you think that it's fair to call this film a dark comedy or a satire?
Well, you know what's interesting about this? When I first saw it in 1976 and saw Finch and, you know, the fact that he announces on live TV he will commit suicide, becomes a major TV celebrity, the mad prophet of the airwaves, and so on. They showed all kinds of things in the news that were absurd at the time, and I was laughing as loud as anyone. And the truth is, a lot of what he did came true in television today. And one of the problems of television news is that they've gone the route of network, not quite as extreme as he paints it, but certainly TV news today is not what it was in 76. And what's interesting to me is that Chayefsky. Yeah, right. That his satire is now very close to the bone.
Well, it was, at the time I thought that the film was not real because we're watching this guy go crazy, and people are very uncomfortable with going crazy on television. And as you point out, now we have all sorts of people, no names mentioned, but, you know, there is a guy named Lou Dobbs. There are others who seem to be pushing going crazy as a style.
It seems to work with the audience.
And why do you think that is today? I mean, at that time, we had Walter Cronkite. When this film was released, it was Walter Cronkite and the voice of reason.
Well, you also had another tradition from talk radio that was creeping up, too. Bud Schulberg, who died just recently, wrote a great film in the late 50s called A Face in the Crowd, which was about a country and western disc jockey, I think kind of a melange of Will Rogers and Arthur Godfrey, who started expressing his political opinions and became kind of a demagogue, very much like well, Howard Beale doesn't really do that. He goes off in another direction.
Well, but Matt as Hell is the sort of thing, actually, that people like Glenn Beck and Keith Olbermann will say now.
Exactly. And I think that's the best answer to that parody. It has become almost literally true. You can see that show.
The only thing really missing is they haven't killed an anchor on live TV. And with all the reality shows, I'm not sure that's that far.
We have a clip where Faye Dunaway's character, Diana, confronts William Holden's character, Max, about changing the way evening news is produced. Let's take a listen.
The fact is, I could make your Beale show the highest-rated news show in television if you'd let me have a crack at it.
What do you mean, have a crack at it?
I'd like to program it for you. Develop it. I wouldn't interfere with the actual news itself, but TV is showbiz, Max. And even the news has to have a little showmanship.
My God, you are serious.
I watched your 6 o'clock news today. It's straight tabloid. That you had a minute and a half of that lady riding a bike naked in Central Park. On the other hand, you had less than a minute of hard national and international news. It was all sex, scandal, brutal crime, sports, children with incurable diseases, and lost puppies. So I don't think I'll listen to any protestations of high standards of journalism. Now, you're right down in the street soliciting audiences like the rest of us. Look, all I'm saying is, if you're going to hustle, at least do it right.
Do you think there's anything wrong journalistically with what Faye Dunaway's character is arguing there, Joe?
No, well, it's the demise of TV news as we know it today, because that's how news managers and whatnot have gone. You know, in the early 60s, the journalists were pretty much controlling television news, but by the end of the 60s, the TV people realized that TV news was a golden egg. It was making a hell of a lot of money, and it was too important for the journalists to control it. So they took control of it in the early 70s, and since then it's been downhill. So I mean, what she says makes sense in a weird sort of way if all you care about is getting a big audience. But if you care about doing good journalism, it makes no sense at all. But then some of the journalism she mentions made no sense at all. One of the great scenes in that movie to me is William Holden plays the news director very, very well, and there's a scene where he seduces her, and from the time of the seduction to the end of the section, act. She doesn't stop talking about the news and what she plans to do until she reaches a climax, and then it ends. It's one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen in the movies.
We have a final clip from Network where Faye Dunaway wants to give a show to a radical leftist group called the Ecumenical Liberation Army.
What kind of show did you have in mind?
I'm interested in doing a weekly dramatic series based on the Ecumenical Liberation Army, and I'll tell you right now what the first show has to be, a two-hour special on Mary Ann Gifford. Let me tell you what I want. I want a lot more film, like the bank ripoff the Ecumenical sent in. The way I see the series is, each week we open with an authentic act
a political terrorism taken on the spot and in the actual moment. Then we go to the drama behind the opening film footage. That's your job, Miss Hobbs.
Dave, this summer, NBC produced a reality TV show called The Wanted about hunting down terrorists.
They're staging their own news, just like...
So this, you know, a listener wants to know which one of these films actually depicts the craft of journalism most accurately. I would have said in the past, Network was probably the least accurate. I'm not so sure anymore.
I'm no expert in television news, but my heart goes to His Girl Friday, which I still think strikes a very nice balance between the fun of it, the cynicism of it, the action of it, and the results that you produce, the good you could bring into the world.
Well, you know, Broadcast News in 1986 was a very well-done film on TV news, but I wanted to tell you both that the most ridiculed image of the journalist in the history of journalism and popular culture is that of the broadcast journalist. They are constantly being ridiculed in film after film, even if the film has nothing to do with journalism. The broadcast journalist is constantly ridiculed. I think one reason it's done is that we're more familiar with broadcast journalists and what they do in real live news than we are with newspaper reporters and magazine reporters. But they are among the most ridiculed images I've ever seen in movies and TV and novels.
Although not in Frost Nixon. Well, that's about a journalist who, or a semi-journalist who redeems himself as a journalist.
Well, there's always exceptions that prove the rule. There are some fine, there's a template I use. If the reporter is the lead or the second lead or the third lead, played by a well-known actor, it's usually an heroic portrayal of the journalist. There are some exceptions, but it's usually a fairly heroic portrayal. If the reporter is way down on the list, maybe seventh, eighth, ninth, or an anonymous reporter played by people we don't know, reporter number one, reporter number two, they're usually terrible, terrible people doing horrible things. And that's generally the way it works in throughout movie history.
Well, today we have a crisis both in print journalism and in broadcast journalism because revenues are down. Newspapers are going out of business. The major networks are not making the kind of money they made in the past and are in serious crisis. And the result is we're seeing more and more light news, a lot more tabloidism. Isn't that a logical result of this kind of crisis, Dave?
I think, yeah, the bill has come due for all of that good idealistic journalism.
In the past, TV news divisions were expected to lose money. In the old days when CBS was the Tiffany Network, the entertainment division was supposed to support the news division. At a certain point, I guess after 60 Minutes became such a success and such a big moneymaker, they expected the news division to turn a profit as well.
Exactly.
Joe, can we ever put the genie back in the bottle?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, everybody talks about how rotten the image of the journalist is today in movies and other popular culture. And the fact remains, the image of the journalist hasn't changed that much throughout the years. One of the most vicious attacks on journalism I've ever seen in the movies is a film called Five Star Final, which came out about the same time The Front Page. It was based on a Broadway play written by a newspaper man, and it's a vicious portrayal of journalists and in the tabloid paper. The editor, Edward G. Robinson, is constantly washing his hands to get the dirt off his hands, and Boris Karloff plays this really menacing reporter who poses as a clergyman and steals information from people. And the ending shot is the newspaper in the gutter with dirt and crap being poured all over it. That's the last shot of the film. This was in 1930. So I don't think the image of the journalist as being somebody not wonderful is a brand new image. I think back in the 30s, the films depicted the journalists as pretty bad people.
I want to thank the two of you for talking to us about films and journalism. Joe Saltzman is a professor of journalism and director of the Image of the Journalist in Popular Culture Project at USC Annenberg. Dave Kerr writes for the New York Times. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you. Thank you.
On Wednesday's show, William Cohen, author of the bestseller House of Cards, talks about the questionable role the Fed and the Treasury Department played in the sale of Merrill Lynch to Bank of America. Then, how a con man rewrote the history of modern art. Also, journalist Alex Dryden talks about his new novel, A Romana Clay, that examines the making of modern Russia. Plus, Word Maven Patricia T. O'Connor takes your calls on the English language. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Nicole Silversack, Adam Delahanty, and contributing producer Virginia Doris. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow.